Hi, this is Mark Jenkins. The following message is entitled A Door Disappeared, which was originally taught in September of 2012 and is a pivotal message necessary to fully appreciate what Jesus accomplished for us by being born into this earth as a baby and eventually dying in our place on the cross, both as the Son of Man as well as the Son of God. It is so important that we understand what Jesus did for us. I hope that you enjoy this message.
Father, what a privilege. What a privilege it is to be able to call myself a child of God. To recognize that I'm a son. Jesus. You know what you've been showing me. Holy Ghost. You know without you I can't share it. Please speak through me. And bring clarity. So that what's inside of me can be inside of them. Amen. Well, it all started a few days ago. He showed me a picture or something. And from that picture, he sent me into my little desk, and I sat down on my little desk. I had my Bible out, and I'd pray in tongues. I'd cry. I'd read the word, and I'd type. About 2.5-3 days of that. I didn't let on to anybody, really. Debbie has a little bit of idea, but it has so impacted me. So impacted me. And you think, how can a little picture, how can you see a little picture of something and it so impacts you that it takes 29 pages and it's not complete? It's still incomplete. 29 pages. From one glimpse of something. I have no notes. What I have is inside of me right now. And I'm shaken. Because I know that little bit by little bit he's going to pull this out. And it's not going to happen in this service. I know that. I mean, right now I'm going to give you the introduction. But what he showed me, it's taken literally years for him to put the pieces together on the inside of me. And then in a second, give me a little bitty picture and it starts to unfold everything. Okay. Just to give you a little bit of a background. And I've shared a lot of the things I'm going to say. You've heard me say before. But the difference is going to be this. Now it's going to start gelling. The individual pieces, as they come together, they gel. And they make something that you can grab a hold of. So let me start by going back just a little bit in time. When I first got born again, The year was 1989, the end of 1989, going into 1990. If you could go back and look at tapes of different ministries, national ministries, and what they were teaching at that moment, what you would find is on the big major national shows, you'd go back and see that they were talking about this covenant. That's what they would talk about. And they would tell people, you are in a covenant, and you have covenant rights. And so I came into this, and here I am just as green as grass. Just as green as grass, hearing these people talk about covenant. Well, I can read. You know, they taught me that in school. So I can open up the Old Testament, and I can read the Abrahamic covenant. And I can see what that, you know, the essence of what it is to be in a covenant. So these people are saying, you're in a covenant. And I'm saying, oh my goodness, that means I have covenant rights. And they tell you, you need to go to God and demand. Use those covenant rights. Make a demand of what belongs to you. And being the green grass that I was, I'd stand up, God, I deserve this. Oh my goodness. Oh, Jesus. What I deserve. In all of my ignorance, my heart was right. But you know, you can be sincere and sincerely wrong. And that's exactly how I was for years. I thought that. And I look back now and I think, you know, at that moment, if you would go to me and you would ask me, do you feel like you have something to go share with the world? Yes, I do. You have a covenant with God. You have I want to go share that with the world. And I look back now and I thank God. Thank God that you didn't let me go spout off a bunch of stuff that I really didn't understand and get people going in wrong directions. Because once you get started going down those wrong directions, it's really hard for God to turn your whole understanding around because you think you know it. And that's the way I was for years, thinking I understood covenant, thinking, okay, this is what I have in this covenant. And then all of a sudden, and all the time though, I had heard that tape, and I've told you before several times about praying in tongues. So here I'd watch these TV shows, and they'd tell me about my covenant rights, but I'd still pray in tongues. I've been doing this for years. Now, consistently, back in the early 90s, I have to admit, it was a hit and a miss. And I know every one of us can relate to that. Hit and a miss. But still, my spirit man would gravitate back towards praying in tongues. Never would get away from it. So I'd pray in tongues. And slowly he began to take me from that very limited understanding about covenant to a message at some point in time. Do you know that you're a son? What? That covenant created a sonship, and that's what you're a part of. As a teacher, I know, standing up in front of you, that when I say things, that it impacts you on the inside. I understand that. And I understand how important it is to choose these words as he gives me these things, to choose the words very carefully. And here's what I'm facing this morning. What I want to talk to you about, when I say it, it's going to be, oh, Mark, I know all about that. It's kind of like, you know, when you're in grade school, you sit there in a classroom and the teacher stands up and says, okay, this morning class, and this it's on this level, this morning class, I'm going to teach you a revelation beyond revelations. Class, get your pens and papers out. Okay, are you ready? All right, here it is. 2 plus 2, get ready, equals 4. And you all respond just like you respond right then. Yes, Mark, we understand that. But do you know why 2 plus 2 equals 4? You see, what God showed me is I'm a son. I am a son. But not just that I am a son. He showed me why. Why I am a son. See, knowing 2 and 2 is 4 is great. And you can do wonderful things with that. But what I want to know is, and what changes me on the inside is, can you tell me why? See, for years, folks, for years, I walked into the church building and sat down. And they could say, oh, Jesus died for you. Oh, your blood washed. Oh, you're a new creation. And they could tell me these things, and we can all rejoice together and thank God for it. But when you ask them, okay, let's sit down together, I want you to explain to me why. Why? How did Jesus, being nailed to that cross, how did that free me from my sins? And so many times the answers were something like this. Well, brother, you just have to receive that by faith. You know what that's a clue to? They have no idea either. Brother, you just have to receive it by faith. Oh, so you're just like me. You don't have any idea either. I can read. I can read what the Bible says. I can read Romans 8 and find out that I'm a child of God. I'm a son. But see, there's something about me. I'm the guy that runs around with a little truck that says handyman on the side of it. Because I'm going to tell you something. When your toilet doesn't work, you want the toilet to work. You don't care about how water flows. You don't care about any of that. Just make the toilet flush for me. I've sat in church service after church service wanting to know, how do I get my prayers answered? How do I understand this thing that's happened to me? So now, the other day, the Lord showed me why the toilet flushes. He showed it to me in a second. And once you see how the water flows and you see everything, it's like, okay. Now show it to me in the scriptures. And every place I look now, I see this sonship. So we're going to have to start out here, first of all. And like I said, I can't get all this out in one service. I know I can't. It's going to take time. So please bear with me. And let me get this out of me. I can give you enough to get started this morning. I can give you enough that's going to cause you to start digging in yourself and let the Holy Ghost reveal some things to you. He's been doing this for weeks, but it wasn't really apparent to me until this last week when he showed me that little picture. I know that this is the message for the hour. I just happen to be the mouth right here speaking it. Go back in your minds to Adam. Not the last Adam, but the first Adam. I want you to see Adam in the garden. And we've all, see, this is all so familiar ground. I don't want you to miss it just because of the familiarity of it. Here God has formed the body of Adam. Lean down. He didn't just blow in his mouth. We all know that. He released life. The life that came from within him was released into Adam. There was life there. The life, where did it come from? Inside of God. And instantly, here he opens his eyes. Here, can you just picture that in your mind? Opens his eyes. And he is looking directly into the face of God. He has no anxiety, no embarrassment, no nothing. Why? Why? Because if I looked into the face of God, I mean, you can say those words, but can you actually appreciate what you're saying? Looking into the face of God Himself. And you're not going to have some kind of apprehension, some kind of anxiety. Adam didn't. He didn't. He looked right into his face. Innocent. Totally innocent. He looked right into his eyes. Into the eyes of God. Because God had created him in right standing with righteousness. He created him righteous. Holy. That's how he was created from the very beginning. Now, let's imagine in our mind God sitting there talking to Adam. Having a conversation with Adam. Okay, Adam. I want you to do something righteous. What do you mean, God? You know, do something righteous. What do you mean? It's not that I can do something. It's who I am. It's how you made me. I am righteous because you invested this within me. It came from you. It's in me now. Adam, be holy. Well, I am holy. Because this is how you made me. You made me with life that came from inside of you. You made me righteous. It's not something that I have to try to earn. I am this way. Well, okay. But I want you to be my son. Be your son. I am your son. I can't try to be this. It's what I am. And you can see that when you look through the genealogy. I believe it's Luke. I'm not positive. I believe it's Luke. If you follow it, you'll find out that it says, "And Adam, the son of God." He didn't have to try to be this person. It is who he was born. He was born a son of God. He was born righteous. He was born holy. It was him. It was him. And God made a covenant with him. I don't want to shock you too much. The Adamic covenant was very simple. This is everything that belongs to you. I'm entrusting this in your hands. You have dominion over everything I've just made. The only law to this is this one law. That tree right there. Don't eat it. That's it. That's the only law to this covenant. And what did he do? Well, he didn't control, he didn't take over, take lordship of his house. And he allowed the woman to influence him and influence his decision. She partook of it. She looked at him. She turned to him. He's standing right there. He could have stopped it at any time. Here's one of the questions that I had as I went through this. And it just dropped inside of me. So I'm going to add this right now. Why, God, even put the tree there? I tell you what. Let's just go back and you can just make everything and leave that tree out and everything will be fine. How's that? Ever thought about that? For him to leave that tree of the knowledge of good and evil out of the garden would be for him to have made the decision for Adam. Couldn't do it. That decision wasn't God's to make. That's the way love is. Love is about you deciding to come towards me. You deciding of your own free will. And that's what God placed that there. It's your choice. My will is that you don't, but it's always your choice. It's always that way with God. And we know what happened. Took that fruit. And now we're coming up on what God showed me. As I say it, in your minds, you're going to see this. You're going to see this picture just the way I did. So here he stands. Here Adam stands in perfection. Perfection. Everything around him is perfect. Filled with the life of God. Righteous. Holy. Stands here in perfection. Takes the fruit. Now watch him. Takes the fruit. He takes a bite. Now watch this. As he takes the bite, watch it. He steps through a door. Do you see it? Do you see it? He takes that bite. He steps through a door. And immediately, the door slams shut behind him. Watch it. And he turns around to grab the doorknob. Now see this. There's no door there. There's no door. It's gone. It's gone forever. That door is gone forever. That door will never come back. Not that one. Not that door. It is gone forever. And where is he at now? Where is he at? Now, he's in spiritual death. And he turned around to look to try. I want to get back. Can I get back through that door? Can I get back into that place? I'm going to say this so many times that it just impacts you. I want to get back into that position that I just stepped out of. I'm in spiritual death now. Can you give me another door? Folks, that's the message of the gospel. The gospel is about a door and about the person that leads us through the door. He leads us and we follow because he is. He's the good shepherd. But first there had to be a door created. There had to be a door created because this one that Adam just stepped through is never coming back. Never. It's gone. And that position that Adam enjoyed, remember a few minutes ago I was talking about the position of sonship. I'm a son. I'm a son. I've been born. I have your life inside of me. I have your life right here in me. Well, when he made that step, that life was gone. What was in its place? Spiritual death. Like I said, I don't have any notes. I'm just waiting on him to see where he wants to go next. He wants to go to John chapter 10. John chapter 10. As this continues to come out of me over the next, I don't know however many times it takes to get it out, along the way he's going to have me drop pieces of the puzzle that will help you put this together. You know, ever put a puzzle together and you've got some pieces and you can tell, okay, I can see this, I can see the image on here. I think it probably goes up on this top part of this puzzle. So I'm just going to go ahead and lay it there right now. And later on, as the pieces come together, that piece is already there. Well, that's what, as he gives these pieces to me, I'm going to put them out there. And then as the puzzle continues to go together, then that peace will already be in place. So we're going to do that right now in John chapter 10. Now, I can't really read all of John chapter 9. I don't want to get your mind going in that direction. Other than to say that there was a miracle that happened with the blind man. And in that miracle with the blind man, just read it on your own later. Let me just synopsize it. In that miracle with that blind man, the religious leaders, they went and they questioned even the guy's parents. Can you imagine questioning the guy's parents? I mean, come on. Well, and then their response. Well, how did your son get healed? Well, and the answer is so precious. Well, that's our son, okay? I mean, there's just like they're just stepping back. Okay, I have to admit that that is my son. And yes, I have to admit that he was born blind. But other than that, I'm not going to say anything else. I don't know how he can see now. Thank God he can, at least. I don't know, but you know, hey, how he got this way, I don't know. And what are these religious leaders trying to do? Trying to get something to pin on Jesus and hear a miracle's done. Folks, that's religion. That is utter 100% religion. And you need to know, as miracles like water begin to flow here, like water, the religious people, they're going to be the ones, they're going to have the biggest problem. The biggest problem. And that's what's happening here in these Pharisees. And we're going to look at the last verses in chapter 9. I want you to see the mentality of these Pharisees. These Pharisees, these religious leaders, they think, we've got it all. We are it. We're it. Don't you want to be like us? Look how the end of chapter 9. And Jesus said, verse 39, and judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see, that see might be made blind. Now why would he want somebody blind? Why make somebody blind? Why would he want that? Well, who's the people that he's been dealing with? It's people that thought they had the answer. We've got the answer. They think they can see. That's what he's saying. You think you can see. But really, you're going to be made blind. You think you have the answers. You don't have the answers. Some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words and said unto him, "Are we blind also?" Jesus said, "If you were blind, you should have no sin. But now you say, 'We see.'" We have the answer. Follow us. This is the way. Come this way. This is it. All you got to do is just follow the law. That's it. That's all this is about. That's all this is about. It's just law. That's it. You follow this and that's the answer. That's all you have to do. What did Jesus say? Jesus said, "But now you say, 'We see.' Therefore, your sin remains." Now he goes into chapter 10. "Verily, verily, truly, truly, I say unto you, he that enters not by the door into the sheepfold." Now just stop right there. Entering a door. The door into the sheepfold. "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that enters not by the door into the sheepfold." Stop right there. I don't want you to look up at me. He's been talking to Pharisees that think they can see. They think they have entered the door. They think the door that Adam stepped through by following the law, they have stepped back through that door. No. That door's gone. Do you get that? They think they can follow laws and follow the rules and the traditions, and that door will just open up magic. That door is gone. There's no standing there for them to go back into. "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that enters not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbs up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber." They're trying to use the law to climb up into that place that Adam lost, going some other way. They're thieves and robbers. Haven't we heard him call them thieves and robbers before? They're trying to take the law and make themselves righteous by keeping the law. That wasn't what the law was all about. The law was to prove to them they couldn't keep it. The unrighteousness that they were born into, they weren't going to reverse it by keeping the law. That's not possible. And that's all the law was to do. Before the law, they didn't even know they were sinners. They didn't even realize that there was anything wrong with what they did. Have your neighbor's wife, kill whoever you want, steal whatever you want. If that's somebody else's, I want it, I'm going to take it. What's wrong with that? And God, after he joined himself to a man named Abraham in what's called a covenant, he made a law through a man called Moses, who was through the genealogy of Abraham. And that law, see, I'm giving you a few pieces now that are going to connect later. That law was the law that was to be kept in order to remain in that covenant. Well, they couldn't keep it. And so God instituted sacrifices and he said, "Don't kill the people, kill the animals in their place." All the time, that was all it was about. Just kill the animals in their place. Well, what happened through the generations? Oh, if we do this, then we're righteous. No, you're not. It's only a thing to keep God from having to destroy you. That's it. And to show you that you, at your core, you're a sinner. Because until the law was in place, there was no way for you to know that. There was no measuring scale. You know, 2 foot could be 2 miles. Who knows? There's got to be a scale. There has to be something to tell me what sin is, because when I'm blind, how will I ever know how far 2 miles is and 2 inches? I'm blind. Someone's got to show me how far 2 miles is. Okay, here's 2 miles. Well, why? Because I said it is 2 miles. And that's the law. And so all these Pharisees, I'm righteous. I keep the law. I'm so righteous. And here's what Jesus said to him. He said, you've tried to climb up another way. You're a thief and a robber. Verse 2. But he that enters in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter opens, and the sheep, verse 3, the sheep hear his voice. And he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. This parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood not what things they were which he spake unto them. Then said Jesus unto them again, verily, verily, truly, truly, I say unto you, I'm the door. I'm the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door, and by me, if any man enters in, he shall be saved and shall go in and out and find pasture. He shall go in and out and find pasture. You realize, when you stepped into this church building today, you stepped in to this building. What did you step out of? You stepped out of the outside. You stepped out of the outside and into the in. And now you're all the way in. Jesus came to be a door. And then he stepped through the very door that he became as our shepherd. I have to be careful. I can't go ahead too much, because I can feel you right now struggling to get what I'm saying. So I have to go really slow. He stepped, Jesus became the door that he himself stepped through. Now, let me show you what he stepped out of and into. For those of you that are ever confused, and maybe those of you listening right now, if Jesus died spiritually, he had to die spiritually. There's no two ways around it. There's no two ways around it. If he didn't die spiritually, we're sunk. He had to join us, not by committing a sin, but by becoming our sin. Join us. That's what, when he was in something, he had joined us in spiritual death. Became the door. And we'll go into this in detail. I'll give you a piece of it right now. Because he became your sin. In his innocence, became your sin. Spiritual death. Died in your place. creating a door for us to step through out of where he was, where we were before we were born again. Spiritual death, stepped through the door. He had created himself being the door. Stepped through this into life, into sonship, sonship, sonship. And when you identify in him, and we're going to talk about why you identify in him. Why? I heard it for years. Substitution identification. It's wonderful words. But if you can't explain it to me, they're just words. I want to know why I can identify in him. Why is it? And in that identification with him, the substitutionary work that he died in my place, and I can identify in him now in his place of sonship. And he is a son, the first begotten, Hebrews says, from the dead. And in him, I have my sonship. Not a covenant. The covenant's not between me and God. It's between, and this is going to take time to really spell this out. It's between God and God. How come a mediator isn't a mediator of one, but God is one? You ever seen two people having a dispute between one another and they say, okay, this is going to have to go to a mediator. We're going to have somebody in between here that can mediate these two parties together. Because these two parties are at a deadlock, so here, mediator, I want you to mediate between these two. And then you get a scripture that says, a mediator is not a mediator of just one, but God is one. And you sit there and you scratch your little head and you think, yeah, God's one. And then there's talk about a mediator. But a mediator is not a mediator between two. But God is one. And you pray, and you scratch your little head. And I told you, I can't give you every detail right now. I don't want to blow your heads up. I can give you a little bit at a time. And I want to say this because this just came up inside of me. He said this to me when I was at home getting ready to come here today. He said, Mark, your soul wants to get out there and show everybody what a great revelation that you've got. That's what your soul wants. And everybody wants to have that big revelation and understand it in their soul. That's not what this is about. What this is about is, I want you to be able to go home and fix your own toilet. I want you to know how it works. I want it to be a revelation to you too. I want you to understand you are a son. You are righteous. You're not trying to earn righteousness. Neither was Adam, the first Adam. He wasn't trying to earn holiness. He was born this. What can I do to make myself holy? I can't. I'm holy because you made me this way. That's holiness. You're born at your core. Who you are holy. You are righteous. You are a son of God. That's who you are. What we have to do is get that revelation that your spirit man clings to. Says, yes, give me more of that. That's what you gravitate for. We got to get that from the inside of you to the outside of you. We got to get you walking in this. Because when we can walk in this, then we can have as a reality everything that we're supposed to have. What was that? Look at Jesus. Look at Jesus. And here's what stumped me for the longest time. Here's what stumped me. I could see Jesus walking on this earth. I could see Jesus. Was he born with the life of God inside of me? Sure he was. Did he have to do righteous things to make himself right? No, he was born righteous. Born holy. Born with the life of God inside of him. But here was what caught me up. I couldn't figure it out. How could he get what he was born as into me? How could he get it in me? Because if I can ever figure that out, if I can ever understand how he got who he was born, was he Son of God? Yes. You know, he didn't say that very much. If you go through, and this is a homework assignment for you, go home, get your concordance out. How many times it says, Son of Man? And I'll give you a hint. 86 times it says, where Jesus identified himself. It wasn't somebody else calling him Son of Man. It was him identifying himself Son of Man. Son of Man. Son of Man. Son of Man. Seldom do you see him say Son of God. It was in that account in chapter 9 where he went and got that boy that was blind. And he identified himself. He posed it as a question. He said, what if you could find the Son of God? What would you do? He said, if I could find him, I'd believe. He said, you've met him. I am him. He doesn't do that very often, but he did it right there just before he scolded the Pharisees and he went into chapter 10 and talked about being the door. Becoming the door, excuse me. He identified himself as the Son of God. Why did he use 86 times over the Gospels? Why so many times? Why don't you just say Son of God? Because what was more important for us to realize is that when he was nailed on that cross, he wasn't just nailed there as Son of God. He was also the embodiment of Son of Man. He didn't even call himself Son of Abraham. He went all the way back. He included everybody all the way back to and including Adam. Why? Because the word Son of Man is Ben Adam. And it's talking about being the son of Adam. He went all the way back there because redemption is for everybody. Even Adam. All the way back. All the way back. Now I have to find a place where I'm going to have to unhook the cart for this time. Let's look at... Let me just stop here just for a second. Okay, we're going to stop on... We're not going to do any more in chapter 10. What we're going to find out as we walk through this together, we're going to identify why Jesus said, Son of Man, I'm Son of Man. I am Son of Man. We're going to find out why that was so important. Why? Because in that is what freed us from sin. In that. But I'm not going to just throw you out a word and say substitution. Because as we walk through this, you're going to find out why he's my substitute. How the toilet flushes. Because it will change you. I'm telling you, I sat there and typed and typed and typed and cried. I mean, I went into... I shook on the inside and cried and typed as this came out of me, the understanding of this. And then the next thing, I would type something and stop, and a verse would drop inside of me. And it was the next step. And I would go and start typing again. And then another verse came. And another verse came. This is the gospel. This is the gospel. The gospel is, there was a door that Adam stepped through, and that door shut. And as much as he wanted that door to come back, it was never coming back. Not that door. But Jesus came to make a new door, to become a new door, for us to step through out of spiritual death and into spiritual life. As we follow him, as we follow the shepherd, as we follow him from his place where he became death in our place into life, as we follow him, we became sons in God's family. It all goes back to a man by the name of Abraham. But don't think that you're in a covenant, because you're not. The covenant's between God and God. It will never be broken. Never. Never, ever broken. But what he's done is create a place for us. A new place. That place is called the first begotten from the dead. Sons of God. You're a son of God. You could just look at a mirror and just say that over and over. I am a son of God. I am righteous. I am holy. Why? Because just like Adam was born that way, you were born that way. I don't feel righteous. I don't feel holy. I do bad things. Well, you know what? You got some issues with the outward part of you that didn't get born again. You got to deal with that. But you can. And everything we teach here is how to deal with that. That's the whole message that people run away from, screaming and crying, I don't want to do that. It's the only way to be free. To be who you are on the inside. Get him out. Let him go. That's it for today. We will pick this up again soon. Be blessed.
Hello again, this is Mark. I hope that message blessed you. For more information about our ministry, you can write to us at Mark Jenkins Ministries, P.O. Box 701138, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 74170, or on the internet at www.markjenkinsministries.org. Just look for the contact page. Thank you for listening, and be blessed.